My First Million, hosted by Sam Parr and Sean Puri, is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. My First Million features famous guests like Alex Hormozi, Sofia Amoroso, and Hasan Minhaj, sharing their secrets for how they made their first million and how to apply their learnings to capitalize on today's business trends and opportunities. Sam and Sean recently sat down with Tim Ferriss to talk about his latest lifestyle experiments and how to spend a perfect 24 hours. You can find this episode and listen to My First Million wherever you get your podcasts.
In today's episode, we bring together two executives at rising unicorn Drata: Sydney Sloan, their CMO, and Adam Ahrens, their CRO. Both of them have uniquely built unicorns in the past, with Sydney at SalesLoft and Adam at Okta, as well as many other career successes. We're going to talk about how they've teamed up to build a remarkable go-to-market system, including and starting with how they diligence each other. Let's dig in. All right, Adam, Sydney, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be here.
I'm so excited. I think I've known you collectively both for like 15 years, so it's so exciting to dig in. And I was shocked when we were talking about this episode. A subject came up that I've never really codified. I've never really spoken to other leaders about, and that is how you diligenced each other as you were considering joining Drata. And it's just like, I mean, of course, if you're ahead of marketing or ahead of sales, this is going to be a critical partnership for you. And of course, you should figure out who your counterpart is going to be. So Sydney, maybe we'll start with you. Can you unpack how you did that with Drata and with Adam specifically?
Absolutely. I think I've learned over the years, when you're thinking about joining a company, you're like always talk about the people you want to work with, but so often you diligence like the CEO. I think the most important relationship and where it can go wrong is if the marketing and sales teams aren't aligned. And so as I was diligencing a lot of companies, I think I talked to like 35 different companies, and it came down to a couple, you know, the relationship with the sales leader was critical. And the things that I was looking for in a sales leader was experience. I mean, Adam's taken a company public before, so that is super exciting to me. The partnership and value of marketing. Too often, sales leaders think of marketing as a lead machine, not a partnership and how we bring our teams together and go crush the market. And third, I just want him to be a good human being. This is not an easy tour. You know, I did back channel calls. I talked to his former two CMOs, and they just talked about what a good human being he was. And that makes it easy. I think that makes it easy then to have the good debates. And we did that.
Hey, folks, just Mark here. Yeah, this concept of back channeling is critical. What this essentially means is you are reaching out to people that know this individual, whether you're doing a peer review like this or you're doing an interview. And you're finding folks that they didn't provide to you, to try to get a more honest view on this individual. Now, I have to do a little side of like, you need to check with your legal counsel and your HR team to understand the legality of this. But aside from that, it is common practice. Some of the best interviewers I know put tremendous weight on the back channel. And so number one, you need to do it. And number two, there's a lot of science in how you ask the questions, because a lot of times, people are going to be overly optimistic. They want to be nice. I'll give you an example of a good question. So far, in this particular role, we're looking for someone that has a high work ethic, a strong amount of coachability, a great culture fit, and someone that works in a team well. Can you rank this individual, each of those attributes, from highest to lowest? And so you see what I'm doing there is you're forcing the individual to give me some insight. What is this person exceptional at? And what is this person, say, above average at? And it allows you to check their insights against what you've understood so far. All right, let's get back to Sydney.
we probably had, what, 3 or 4 different calls, Adam, I think. And we talked about, like, what are we going to disagree about and how is that going to work? And when things go awry, like I've had passive aggressive partnerships with sales leaders, you know, where they say yes and then they never follow through because they're like, I didn't want to do that. I wanted us to be true partners. Adam was the one. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. When you mentioned the back channeling, I'm curious about how you actually did that. Because like if you're asked, hey, what do you think of Adam? They're always going to be like, oh, he's amazing. You know, like how did you approach that discussion to really get at the honest truth?
There was one conversation I recall where the leader, she was a CMO and she joined when they were CRO, CMO, and then Adam took over the head. And she said she fought to stay independent and she wished she would have actually been part of Adam's team. And so that resonated with me in someone's reflection of, because I would have felt that way too. Like, absolutely no way. I'm not reporting to CRO. I'm a CMO. I want the seat at the table. And so the fact that she said she wished she would have done it differently meant something to me, because that speaks not only to his like ability to lead a revenue organization, but also his ability to lead a company.
Amazing. All right, Adam, let's turn over to you. You were here for a bit at Drata full time.
Yep.
And you are part of the selection process for your marketing leader partner. Can you walk through how you diligenced Sydney?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I spent 6 months as an advisor to Drata before I joined. So I had some optics and knew that we were going to need a CMO.
Yeah, this whole 6 months advisorship, I love it. I love it from the executive candidate perspective, and I love it from the startup hiring perspective. I get so many calls from my peers in the industry saying, Mark, you know, I'm trying to figure out what to do next. And if there's someone like Adam who doesn't necessarily need a paycheck tomorrow, I often say, you're crazy if you go through a 2-week interview process and pick your next company. Instead, I often encourage them to do some temporary advisement. Get out there and find 2 or 3 companies to spend a day a week with for months. And you'll start to understand everything about that company, how the founding team works, how the executive team works, all the skeletons that are in there. And you'll make a better decision. One of them will naturally pop and you want to be a part of it. Or maybe you'll just have to go off and find others. And then from the startup perspective, same thing. Like, you're crazy if you don't have an advisory board of each function in your organization, an opportunity to go out and bring someone that is years ahead of where you could hire them into the fold of what's going on with the hope that you convert them to a C-level executive. So I love what happened here with Adam and Drata as they forged this relationship. All right, let's get back to Adam.
So I was a big part of the interview process. And when I met Sydney, she's strong. And I wanted to do diligence to make sure that she was a good person, to her point. That's really important to me. I love strong people, but I have to be able to work with them. I find that I'm strong too. And when you can work with good people and understand the why, whether you agree with it or not, you can do it. During the interview process, I got to know Sydney. And then I asked Adam Markowitz if I could run the reference process. And so he let me do that. So I talked to 2 CEOs and 2 CROs that Sydney had worked with and just dove in with them. Like, tell me about her. Tell me about her character. Tell me about what you like, what you didn't like. She seems very strong. How does that interact in the executive room? And one CEO said something that I really liked. And he said, she'll tell you like it is. And there's nobody that I trust more to give me honest feedback. And he said, whether you agree with it, you'll come to a point, and then as a team, you'll go do it. But she'll be honest with you and give you just really straight feedback. And I love that. The sales leaders that I talked to as well talked about how there was partnership and how they work together. I value marketing, I think, in a different way than a lot of sales leaders do. We're in this together, like completely, 100%. You go, we go, fireman's credo, and Sydney's that way.
That's really cool. I wonder, Adam, if you could go back, coming into that process, you hadn't met Sydney yet, but you knew you were all going to bring on a marketing leader. you had an impression of what you wanted to see in a partner and what you didn't want to see. Did that change at all as you went through this process and learned more about Sydney and heard how marketing leaders could perform out there?
It's always different. So that, you know, CMOs come from different parts of marketing. Some come from product, some from corporate. And Sydney's experience is unique, and she's done a lot. So she's probably the most accomplished marketing leader I've ever worked with.
This is an important point by Adam. And this sort of is my most important criteria going into a marketing hire. In my experience, most marketing leaders will lean into the specific channel selection and strategy that they're most familiar with. If they've done content marketing through their career, they'll probably bring content marketing to your company. If they've done product marketing in their career, they'll probably bring product marketing to their to your company. If they did ABM in their career, they'll probably bring ABM. So it's rare to find someone like Sydney who is so multidimensional that she'll actually come in and evaluate the context, i.e., what are you selling and to who and what stage are you at to determine those channels. You're not always that lucky. And so as founder and as the executive team, it's important to evaluate what particular marketing strategy and channels do you think the company should exploit first and make sure that the first leader you bring in has that experience and will bring it to the table. All right, let's get back to Adam.
And with that, understanding if there was going to be a good working relationship, was she humble enough with her experience and was she willing to work with me in the way that I've had success with other marketing leaders? And the backdoor references she did on me came back to me in the interview process. And the CMOs that met her were like, you've got to go after this person. I mean, she's a phenomenal human being. And I trust those people. Once we made the decision and Sydney agreed to come on board, and I was 100% in, my whole goal was to make her just absolutely successful.
We didn't discuss this earlier, but I want to go at it just because we haven't talked about this on the podcast, and it's something that almost every B2B startup and tech company hits, which is, should the SDR team report to sales or to marketing? And if I could generalize the debate, on one hand, organizationally, it makes sense to put it in marketing because marketing is sort of there to create the demand and sales is there to convert demand into healthy customers. On the other hand, if I could generalize, marketing is really good at taking a decent amount of money and deploying it into campaigns. And sales is really good at hiring people, designing a process and holding people accountable to the process. So when you look at it that way from a capability standpoint, hiring SDRs and designing a process and holding SDRs accountable to the process is more something that sales should be good at. And those are the debates. So can you like give us your current thinking on that? You know, I guess Adam and maybe Sydney, you can follow on. Like you did start with it, but then you gave it over. Can you maybe update or refresh my thinking on it?
I haven't given it over yet. We're working together on it. That decision's yet to be made. But I know that if I did, I would trust my partner to shepherd it to success. When I left Okta, Ryan Carlson, who was the CMO, took over the SDR team. And he was probably the only person in the company that I trusted not to mess it up. But that being said, dude, I was an SDR. Like that's how I started my career. So I have a passion for it and I care a lot about those people and it's a farm team for me. And so I'm taking those people, trying to teach them the process so that when they become an AE, they're better at it. And so for me, that takes like emphatic trust. And Sydney was able to establish that with me really quickly because of her experience and because she's probably worked with hard-headed, you know, difficult salespeople like me before. And I don't have an ego anymore, dude. I'm not in this to be the CEO. I'm in this to build the greatest like independent, long-term entity that I can. And I need great people to do that. And Sydney proved that early, and she proves
that's
that every
great.
Day.
And Sydney, how about you? Do you have a perspective on that? Where should the SDR team sit?
I always start with, I've been asked this question a lot given my days at SalesLoft. And I always start with whoever wants them more, because it's a hard team to manage. Let's just be honest, right? You are constantly recruiting, you're coaching, you're managing up, you're managing out. I mean, it is a revolving, you know, seat in good ways and in challenging ways. And if people aren't up for that challenge, because it is constant and it is relentless. And the work is constant and relentless. Let's also say it's hard to be an SDR. So recruiting, managing, motivating, developing, like it takes a lot of calories to really manage a high-performing SDR team. I'll give both sides. Why I advocate for it to be in marketing is because it puts more onus on marketing to generate revenue. And I think the more responsibility we have further down on the funnel to deliver high-quality opportunities to sales, like it just that puts more pressure on us, right? It's not about leads. It's about quality opportunities. And that shouldn't make a difference where they kind of sit in the organization, but I still find that it does. Just the way that it's managed, the way that ownership is associated. So that's a lot of times where I'll say, hey, that's, you know, if the marketing is capable and willing to take a higher accountability to revenue contribution, it does make a difference. For sales, exactly the reason that Adam said. It's a farm team. You're hiring hunters. You're hiring the fire in the belly, like my friend Lars Nelson likes to say. And so that farm team mentality, there is a happy middle ground, I also think, where inbounders work in marketing and outbounders work in sales. That's how I had it at SalesLoft. It worked really, really well because we're able to really maximize the fluidity and finesse of the funnel if someone raised their hand. Like it was minutes. You know, we talked about minutes and seconds, not hours and days. And yet the outbound team, because they're trained differently too, like how to use the tools, the messaging, it's harder to make a warm outbound call than it is to take a hand raiser. And so you kind of have different skill sets, mentalities, experience levels even for those SDRs. And so I think that the teams can work as separate functions in each side of the business. So this was one of our disagreement points, by the way, when we did the exercise and said, what would we disagree on? Let's talk about SDRs, because I would have taken them if that had been offered. And I still would because of my desire to own revenue and that contribution as a leader in the business and to continue to, you know, make that connective tissue as tight as possible from how we are out in market. And SDRs are yet just another channel that we can work through. But Adam was pretty adamant of keeping them. I'm like, all right, well, I'm not going to obviously fight this battle before I'm hired. But we talked about, well, what would work? And what we discussed was, hey, let's make sure that we've got a strong interlock, a weekly meeting where we commit to evaluating what's working and what's not, because I don't want to lose that connectivity. The way I think about it is the conversations that the SDRs are having is the high insight to the marketing messaging we should be delivering. So if they're getting the same question and call after call, we should be addressing that in our marketing messaging so they can further the conversation once they're actually talking to somebody. And if we lose that insight and connectivity, like I think that breaks that seamless experience we want to deliver for the customer. And then also just like, how do we help them, you know, write great emails? How do we help them stay on message? How do we help them, you know, learn more about the product and the customer? By the way, it's reciprocal that we learn when they learn. And so I just didn't want to lose that. So we have we're calling it the SDR Star Team, and it's a cross-functional group that meets weekly with product marketing, our campaign team, some of the top SDRs, SDR leadership, where we go through that on a weekly basis.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add is the world's changed. Like when I was an SDR, you bang phones, you send emails. We have Slack, we have text. We have a virtual world, and that's new to me. And having a partner like Sydney that's thinking about that from a marketing perspective and how to go penetrate that, I think makes it different today than it was even 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, it seems like it's made that decision even more complicated, and you all have evolved my thinking there too. So thank you for that.
My First Million, hosted by Sam Parr and Sean Purry, is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. My First Million features famous guests like Alex Hormozi, Sofia Amoroso, and Hasan Minhaj sharing their secrets for how they made their first million and how to apply their learnings to capitalize on today's business trends and opportunities. Sam and Sean recently sat down with Tim Ferriss to talk about his latest lifestyle experiments and how to spend a perfect 24 hours. You can find this episode and listen to My First Million wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to switch gears to another very unique opportunity we have with the two of you, which is it's so rare for a member, an executive in the startup ecosystem to build a proven unicorn. And what I mean by that is something that actually exited at a above $1 billion valuation. Both of you have done that. What's even more rare is to go back and try to do it again. And here we have two people that are doing that. And I want to dig into what you learned strategically. Were there strategic learnings from SalesLoft and from Okta that you have really ingrained in your executive posture and taken to Drata? And so, Sydney, maybe if you could start there. It could have been a mistake, and I think that's okay because, hey, these companies ended up awesome. Or it could be just something that you took away as a best practice and now you're embedding. So what are your thoughts there, Sydney?
Yeah, it's funny. When I ran into Jason Lemkin at Sastry, he was like, I'm pretty surprised. Like, usually people don't go back-to-back, you know, startups I'm like questioning myself too. No, but I did have a chance to take a pretty nice break in between, and I think Adam did as well. So, you know, getting the energy to come back into like a crazy high growth startup. I mean, like, there's one thing and then there's Drata. Like, it is just not like anything I've ever experienced before. But there is one thing that is like a non-negotiable for me now, or maybe I think about it as like, without it, I don't know how to do my job anymore. And that is about go-to-market alignment. And so it really is coming in. And it took me about a year at SalesLoft to do this. We took a run at it. We didn't get it right. We got distracted by a competitor. We all know. And then we were able to go through this growth alignment process. And Adam knows what I'm talking about because we did it in our first 6 weeks. And that's really like assessing, what are our current go-to-market motions? What other ones do we think are out there? How do we quantify the addressable market? Not the TAM, not the big number, but like really working through the details of the ICP and criteria to get to a tight like number of accounts. And then assessing like, what do we think the value of that account is? What do you think the value of that market segment is over a three-year period? And then taking the leadership team through an exercise. The exercise is alignment. All 14 are probably really good go-to-market options, just not all 14 at once. Like, how do we get to the three that will then lead us to the next two? And so that's what we did. It was in August. I started in the end of June. And Adam can laugh at this. Like, the best part, I think, of the whole exercise, we were on an offsite, was I had everybody kind of, with the 14, put virtual sticky dots on the segments that they thought would come out as top ranking after we went through the process. And the number one, after we went through the process, like only had two dots on it. The one that had like 10 dots on it was like number 10. So it's like we're all smart. We all have done this before. We all have intuition. But when you start comparing, contrasting the opportunities against each other, it changes because you're also looking at product fit, our ability to execute, competitive environment. So it's not just the addressable market, it's all these other factors. And here's the Drata difference, which I know we want to talk about. So Adam went and made the changes the next week. Usually it's like, okay, then we're going to build a plan around it and this, and like maybe, you know, next quarter we'll launch it. No, he made that change the following week. And we're like, holy crap, like, you know, let's go. Okay. So yeah, that's it. Go to market alignment.
Amazing. And totally agree. We can't boil the ocean out of the gate. That's a great point, Sydney. Can you elaborate a little bit about like starting markets and where you try to exploit versus expand?
I've probably done this about 15 times now. So I was doing it a lot when I was at scale doing advisory work. And the one that gets the most overlooked is your current success. And all too often people think, I have to go to the next one to continue to grow, without looking at your current success and realizing there's still so much room available in your current TAM. You don't need yet to change to new TAMs. That's the first one. Like when they go through the exercise and they realize, oh my gosh, we're only like 3% penetrated. Our competitor might have the other 4%, and there's still 80% to go. Like, why are we going to bifurcate our go-to-market? Like, it's just, you don't have to. So that's the first one. It's usually that people try to segment out too quickly when there's still plenty of room left in the market they're targeting. That's already a really good fit. I mean, gosh, Strata, 3,500 customers in 2.5 years. You talk about product market fit, like insane product market fit. So that's the first. And I think the second one is like people want to go vertical really quickly. And I see a lot of board members and investors advising to go to vertical. And that's generally a different beast. You don't sell financial services the same way you sell tech. Even though they're tech adopters, the sales process is totally different. The market is totally different. You have to hire different salespeople.
We need to underline what Sydney is saying here. We don't need to boil the ocean in the early days. We don't need to build an enormous product and sell it to everyone just because the VCs want to see a $1 billion TAM. Our objective as strategists in the marketing and sales suite is to figure out how to grow revenue in the next 2 years. What's the most predictable, easiest path from 1 to 10 million? What's the easiest, most predictable path from 10 to 40 million? That's what we're trying to exploit. And that decision has three dimensions: our product scope, the target market, and the sales channel. Early on, it's often sell into the SMB, our initial product scope, through outbound sales. And that 2 or 3 year journey, to Sydney's point, allows us to run experiments to prove the next growth channel. That could be a new product that we cross sell. It could be a new market like going upstream. It could be a new channel like content marketing or channel sales through partnership. But all too often we try to boil the ocean, and that leads to failure. And Sydney does a good job of helping us understand the boardroom discussion of like, we don't need to prove this $1 billion market today. We just need to have confidence that it's there. But we're much better off exploiting the known as we go through this 2 year journey. All right, let's get back to Sydney.
I think it's easier to go geographic distribution before vertical distribution.
Yeah, that's a great point, Sydney. Let's turn it over to you, Adam. A remarkable run at Okta. What was your strategic learning from that journey that you brought to Drata?
I think there's a few. So I'm asked a lot when I start with a company, what are like the most important things to me in order to establish early? And it's operations and enablement are the two things that I rely on. One, because we're constantly iterating and getting better, and I need great enablement to constantly make sure my people are learning and getting better. And I need operations to give me information. Data is a powerful thing. I believe in being totally transparent, whether it's good or bad.
I love that you mentioned continual learning, because I've never personally walked into a startup or even seen someone walk into a startup where they nailed, for example, the optimal discovery call guide out of the gate. It just takes iteration. So Adam, how do you codify iteration and learning? How did you operationalize that?
You know, I've been taught by some great leaders. And so you jump on the shoulders of others and you ask questions. You bring in great mentors early. Being in a startup is like running through a forest, right? You don't always know where you're going. It's like tree, 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 versus somebody charting a path and saying, you know, I've been through that forest and you want to take a left and you want to go right. You want to stay straight. So I've been fortunate to have some great mentors, and I used them early in my career. Now, like you mentioned, Mark, we've known each other probably 15 years in the gray hairs that we've got. And I rely on the mistakes that I've made and how I've been able to correct them Sydney brought up earlier that we made some strategic bets early when she came on board, and I implemented them right away and refocused the team around them. Said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to stop doing everything else, and we're going to go do this. And it was in the data. It was in the information. You could see it. But without getting us into a room and then weighing everyone's vote and pulling that out, which, by the way, is a simple process, and it's focused. But then to come out of that, it's like, we're in a startup. We need to move now because things change weekly, monthly. Like, months can be too long.
Hey, folks, just Mark here. Interesting what Adam's saying in terms of how things have gone and what he's learned. He talks about being data-driven. Now, I want to debunk a confusion that I often see out there. Yes, there has become a lot more science and data to sales. I like to think that I helped influence that. But I do think founders, especially technical founders, have gone too far in the type of sales leader they want to hire. They tend to want to hire someone who can actually create all the data and understand the data and science at extremely deep level. That's not the job of the CRO and sales leader. They just need to understand that having a data-driven culture is critical and have a right-hand person that is super analytical. I don't think Adam would mind me saying that he is not like a PhD data scientist. That's not our sales leader. He understands how to run a remarkably disciplined process. He knows to hire excellent salespeople and hold them accountable to that process. And he knows how to hire a great right-hand person to produce the data and help him interpret the data and translate that into insights and strategy. That's what we need. We don't need to hire data scientists to run our teams. We need to hire great sales leaders that have an appreciation and priority around data and analytics. All right, let's get back to Adam.
So making sure that I understand the information, I agree with it, I understand the why, and then I can go focus. I have to enable people immediately and get them running in that direction so we can be the best we can be.
I love it. Well, amazing times are ahead. I feel like I'm a football fan and watching the league's best quarterback team up with the best wide receiver, or I'm a concert goer and watching two top musicians do a show together. So I'm so optimistic and excited for what's in store for the two of you, Indrada. Sydney, Adam, thank you so much for coming on the show and dropping knowledge.
Thank you.
Yeah, hey man, thank you for the kind words. It's truly a compliment coming from you. And it's genuine. Love working with Sydney and the rest of the players in the market. Look out, we're coming.
Yep.
Today's episode was written and produced by Matthew Brown. Our show is edited by Pizza Shark Productions. Big thanks to HubSpot for Startups and to the HubSpot Podcast Network for keeping the audio on. Hey, also, we're a new show. So if you like what you hear, or if you hate what you hear, leave us a rating and review over on your favorite podcast player. I love the feedback. Also, check out Stage 2 Capital. We're the first VC firm run and backed by over 500 CROs, CMOs, CCOs. So if you're an entrepreneur looking to scale your business, check out stage2.capital. All right, that's it for today. I'm Mark Robert. See you next week.